Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is René Jorgensen. He is a philosopher of religion who does research into the phenomenon of the near-death experience. And from his background, he investigates the parallels between religion and direct experiences of life after death by people who have near-death experiences. So welcome to the program, René.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I must say that having guests who specialise in this particular subject is not unusual, but would you say a lot more people probably have that experience than perhaps people realise?
Yeah, I think some statistics have shown that in the US alone, between 8 million and up to 15 million is the highest estimate of Americans might actually have had a near-death experience. So it's something that happened to a lot of people, maybe around 10% of the population. So it's a very common phenomenon, actually.
Even that figure surprises me. I suppose the truth is a lot of people don't feel very easy talking about it, so perhaps not many people get to hear about it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think it's a very unusual experience, and it's not the last 30 years it's become very known in our society, in Western society, talked about a lot through media attention and so forth. So more and more people are coming out now, but also some theories suggest that because our medical techniques of resuscitation have improved, then the experience might actually occur more often than it did in the past. So that's another theory.
Right. Now, I believe because of your investigations into this subject, you found that there are different types of experiences, but generally they follow a particular pattern. Now, what is it that you find is common in near-death experiences?
Well, we could say there are kind of two levels to the experience. You could say on the surface of each experience, it looks very individual, and each experience is very unique to that individual. So this is where on the surface where we find, for instance, we find cultural influences. So, for instance, a person from a Western Christian tradition might have a very typical Western experience where there might be inclination to meet a figure like Jesus or some bearded man or something that is very typically Western. But if we then compare that with, for instance, experiences in the East, let's say in Buddhist countries like Thailand, here we find that on the surface, these experiences, they are very Buddhist in character. So there will be like monks chanting and we'll have the Lord Buddha instead of Jesus and so forth. So on the surface, these experiences are very individual, and it can also be very individualized in the way that you will meet a specific, let's say, an aunt or grandmother that's passed on. So it's very unique to the individual and to the specific culture. That's on the surface level. But then if we look underneath, and this is what researchers call core elements of the near-death experience, then we see that there's a common pattern, and this pattern is mostly and generally believed to be universal. And this is, for instance, one of the first steps is that the person will leave the body, have this out-of-body experience, and then many people will experience, some people will experience what's called a void, kind of like a waiting area, and then people will pass on to experience what's called mostly the light. This is what many people have heard about, the light in the near-death experience. And this experience will be kind of very intense emotionally. There will be like a strong sensations of love, of joy, of peace and unity, which is very common also in the spiritual experience. And then there will be, for instance, some elements like the life review. A person can have a backflash of the events in each person's life. This can be both pleasurable, but also sometimes these experiences can be unpleasurable. And this is also where we have a connection to the religious understanding of heaven and hell, because you could draw parallels here, definitely. And then there are some other elements that are very universal as well. So we have two levels to the experience. On the surface, it seems very unique and individual. And then underneath, we have these core universal elements that basically connect different cultures through the essence of their experience.
To me, that sounds exactly like the normal death experience, and I suppose one would say, why should it be any difference, except in the near-death experience, people actually come back. I have read spiritual articles which indicate that whatever one thinks they will meet upon the event of death, or which person they're going to meet, that will in fact be the case, which probably explains why there's a heavy religious content in the people they meet, Buddha, Jesus, etc. But often, of course, it's someone who's a favourite of theirs, perhaps within their family, possibly a mother or a father. Do you find that to be so?
Yes, definitely. I think my personal conclusion and that of other researchers is basically that who you meet on the other side is kind of like a guide. The purpose of this meeting serves to be a guide and making this transition more easy. Because what we find is that the first step when people leave their body and they explain entering another dimension, another realm. And the first thing that we find is that for most people it's very frightening. People will kind of wake up or realize that maybe they're dead, or they will wake up to being in another place, another dimension without their body. And this can be very kind of frightening to many people. And therefore, this guide really serves a purpose of calming down the person. So this can be a grandmother or a relative that where you share a love relation that will work as calming down. It can also be a religious figure, or it could be a being of light that has a very positive impact on the person, and therefore serves as kind of calming down the person and making this transition more easy, basically. Yeah, so that I agree very much with that, definitely.
Right. I mean, in the number of cases you've come across, have any of them struck you as being particularly astonishing or a bit out of the ordinary?
Yeah, there are. I mean, each case is pretty, depending on the depth of the experience. Some people, they have a very vague memory. We have a scale where we basically ask questions about the near-death experience, so we rate the experience, and that has from 0 to 32 points. So normally, if a person scores 7, it will be regarded a near-death experience. But the higher the score, the deeper the experience, the more elements it includes. And of course, the more elements and the deeper the experience is, the more interesting it gets. And many people, they really, I mean, there are people who see other people going up and down. They have a sense, they're witness to how reincarnation works. People talk about many different multiple universes and experience in different levels of these multiple universes. And there are many very, very interesting stories, definitely. Yeah. They're very, however, what I try to do is I try to look for commonality. I try to look for this common, consensus where basically, because rather than relating or relying on just one story that may be unique to that individual or maybe a deep insight that we, it's difficult to say for sure. I try to find this commonality and try to find a consensus within the experience. That's kind of what I'm trying to do.
Mm. Are some near-death experiences coming about because when the person gets over onto the other side, it would seem that the conditions are so wonderful, so peaceful, so loving, that they tend to feel, right, this is it. I certainly don't want to go back to the earth. But sometimes they're told they must because it's not their time to go completely over. Now, do you come across that many times?
Yes, that's a very common after effect. When people come back, they are basically unhappy about being back because the light, this very strong emotional sensation that I talked about before, is very strong. I may add, in my own research, I found that more than 80%, they say that this sensation on the other side is beyond anything they've ever experienced here on Earth. And I even found that 53%, more than half, they actually try to rate how strong the sensation is. And they said that the sensation on the other side is 1,000 times stronger or beyond anything they can describe. So once you leave the body and enter this spiritual realm, it is a very strong and very powerful experience. And then if you then add, 1,000 times stronger emotion than what we're used to here on Earth, if you then add the love and joy and peace and all these pleasurable emotions, then you can only imagine that that's something you want to stay in. And also people say that it's a kind of perfection. It's almost as if we live in this world. You know, there's duality, there's pleasure, there's pain, there's night, there's day, there's good, there's evil. But once you go to the other side, there's only unity, and it's a kind of unity in this extreme bliss that has a sense of perfection, that there's no more nowhere to go else than here. There's no more to know, there's no more to do. You kind of arrive at the final destination, and people would like to stay. So yes, it's very hard for people to come back. And it's also hard to come back for that reason, that once you have experienced perfection, coming back to this world, which is certainly, in most would probably agree, not perfect, and it's actually very hard. I call this, many people talk about ascension. This is when you ascend to God. But these people have actually found God and been on the other side, so they have to descend again. And this dissension from God can actually be very painful, because now you're coming back into the physical world with all its conflicts and all its pain and suffering. And that can be very, very hard for many people to bear. Many people who have this experience are actually in a sort of depression years after, because it's really hard for them to come back, basically.
Mm. Yes, that's understandable. Having said that, people are told it's not their time to stay over on the other side. Do they ever get asked if they want to go back to Earth? In other words, are they actually given a choice?
I think I mostly come across people who are sent back. Mm. They're either sent back or they just return back without, you know, it's mostly the near-death experience, in my view, it's mostly something that happens to people. It's like, you know, they're having the experience, they leave the body, and events kind of happen to them. They have less control over it. That's, I would say, generally speaking, maybe 67% or more. But then there are also stories where people actually ask to be sent back. I've come across a couple of testimonies, especially one woman who's a very strong character, and she was actually arguing with, in her mind, that it was God, basically. And God said, well, it's too late. Your body has been crashed. You've been in an accident. There's no way I can send you back. And she's like, well, I want to go back. There must be something you can do. And she kept arguing. And in the end, because she really wanted to go back, she was actually sent back. So that happens too, yes.
Right. So, I mean, just following up that particular one you've detailed, did she then have to go back into a rather seriously damaged body? Did she recover?
Yes, but magically, is the doctors actually told her that she was never going to walk again. And she said, no, I mean, you know, as she didn't accept God's judgment that she had to stay, she also didn't accept the doctor's judgment. So within 6 months, she was actually walking again. And that totally defied what the doctors had said was possible. So she came back with a very strong sense of purpose and of basically being able to do stuff that's impossible. And she's actually still like that today. Her experience is, I think it's 18 years back in time, but she's still like that today. She came back as another person in a way. And this happens to many people when they come back. They're kind of reborn, you could say. Yes. They're a totally different, new person when they come back.
Well, it does show you what the power of thought can do if you have that particular willpower. That's quite incredible. Could it be possible that, although she didn't perhaps mention it, that she felt she had more work to do on the earth and realized she hadn't completed her time?
Yes, I think I did an in-depth interview with her for almost an hour, and what she related was actually, it was actually her life review that kind of made her wake up. About 30% of people who have near-death experience have what's called a life review, and that's what I explained earlier. It's kind of a core feature of the near-death experience. She had multiple life reviews. She first had a life review of her past, how she had lived. And then after that, she had multiple life previews. This is where the person can see their future. So if they had continued to live, this would be their future. And one of these life reviews showed her how she could have lived a future life with if she had the power and if she had made the right choice to basically take advantage of all her possibilities. And this was a very pleasurable and a very positive life review, where she felt if she just, you know, did the right choices, and if she really, you know, pushed her willpower, she could do magical and really powerful things in her life. And when she came back, she then wanted to do this. She wanted to create this new life for herself, where she let go of all the things that were not good for her, and she made the good choices, and she really tried to empower herself and others in the rest of her life. And that's what she does today. I mean, she's basically, you know, she's coaching people and writing books where she tries to empower other people. So that's a very powerful statement, I think.
Absolutely. In general terms, because of your interviewing these people who've had NDEs, what sort of information have you gained as to what the Summerland is like? I mean, I call it the Summerland because apparently it's so beautiful and so bright and light. It tends to get named that way. But what have you learnt about that area or that dimension that you can tell us about?
Yeah, I should say here, my initial idea was that we all kind of went to the same place, like the idea of heaven, we all go to the same place. And that's, you know, what religion is teaching. And so I thought, in my initial research, I would just, instead of calling it heaven, I would call it the light. So I had this idea that we would all return to the light, and then that would kind of be our end destination. But what I found to my surprise was that people say, well, there is really no end destination. It's kind of open-ended. It's a multidimensional, the other side is multidimensional, and we kind of keep evolving. So what people are telling me is that you go to one dimension and then you can evolve from there to another dimension. So it seems to be kind of eternal, endless in a way. And other researchers have tried to put numbers on these extra dimensions, that there are like 12 levels going up. Yes. And there are also 12 levels going down. And so for me, that's very interesting. It seems that we might be in a kind of eternal evolution, and we're in each dimension is kind of a level in that evolution, that when we kind of have to be ready, or we kind of have to evolve to each level, and that's kind of my one of the interesting things. Another interesting conclusion, and this is something that I focus my research on, I would like to know more about what makes it easy or more or difficult to transit to basically enter this other dimension. Some people have a very distressing time, and they might fight against it, and they might be very fearful, and it can be very painful. And what I find here is that in my most recent research, people say it's like a homecoming. It's like remembering who you really are. I mean, letting go of our physical manifestation and who we think we are in this world. And then once we enter the other side, trying to come home or come back to remembering that we are this light, we are this love. And once we remember that, then we can really transform ourselves and enter these other dimensions.
Right. Now, you did, I think, hint at the areas below the lighted dimension, yeah, where it evidently goes down into the darker areas rather than the light. Now, have you come across people that have actually entered those areas and still come back?
Yes. These are kind of very complicated to understand, but if we look at it statistically, there is about 12 to 15%. One of the largest estimates is made by another researcher, PMH Atwater. She estimates, based on 4,000 cases, that there are about 15% of these, we call them now, distressing experiences. Within these 15%, there's about 5% that are, they would be called hell-like or hellish experiences. These are the ones where you have very the traditional dogmatic imagery of fire and demons and so forth. So we do find about 5% of these experiences that would actually support the religious idea of hell, basically. But But it's not to be understood in a dogmatic sense. What we find within this group of the 15% of having distressing experiences is that it seems to have parallels with this life review. So in this group of 15%, people, they go through very distressing elements of their lives, or they go through episodes where they've hurt other people, and now they kind of have to experience being on the receiving end of their own hurtful actions, basically. And the purpose of this seems to be to teach to love your neighbor. I think a basic conclusion that I find myself, I find almost 90%, they say that there is no other, we are the other. So basically what you do to another, you're doing to yourself. So many researchers also conclude this, that the golden rule seems to be a basic law of the universe, you could say, or from God. So there's this emphasis on teaching. And then as these 15% become very intense and very, very inverted, we arrive at the bottom group, which is the 5% that are very horrific in nature with demons and fire. But even in these experiences, we also seem, it's a kind of sense of being haunted by the past. So the demons would be co-workers that somebody has been very bad to in their past that would come back and haunt them in a shape or form of a demon. So this is a conclusion that I've talked to other researchers about, and they seem to agree as well, that it seems to be different levels of this life review that can become very intense when people kind of interact with the fear, and then they can project very fearful imagery and so forth. So we do have kind of levels in hell, you could say. But most researchers would not like to use the religious term hell, because it's not to be understood in a dogmatic sense. Uh-huh. It seems to be very, very, there's a very different understanding, because basically in all the near-death research, there's not one single case where God is angry. So the idea of judgment and punishment basically does not exist in near-death research. I have tried to look at this in my own research, and there's certainly an element of truth in the experience. Like the golden rule is there. There is right from wrong, and there's also this element that this light is truth. It's absolute truth. So I try to make people explain, well, what do you call this element of truth? And when I try to use words like blame, guilt, judgment, I find a very low score. So I find like below 10% or 12-15%. But then when I use the words like teaching me or showing me love and kindness, then I find a very high score, about 80%. So the conclusion is that there is no punishment and God is not angry. So we're not punished. It seems more to be kind of like a consequence. If we do these actions that hurt other people, basically if we break the golden rule, then we will have to learn what the consequences of being interconnected with the universe and other people, what the consequences are. And God doesn't need to be angry for there to be consequences. I mean, it could also be that maybe it's God that's not, implementing these consequences. So basically there is no punishment and not even judgment. It's more like a discernment showing you where you went wrong, but it's not done in this angry emotional state where we have to be punished. That does not exist at all in near-death research.
Yeah, I must say, I go along entirely with your conclusions there. And I have a number of friends who regularly travel out of the body during their sleep state, and they have entered these areas of light, and they tell me they're absolutely teeming with people in real terms, enjoying themselves, because it's a very enjoyable area to be in. And one of the notable things that comes out of it is that they meet people sometimes that are their own relations that have passed over many years ago, and they present themselves as they were as young, mature people. So there are a lot of differences to what we're used to down here, apparently.
Yeah, that sounds about right, definitely. And it also, I've been trying to kind of understand this uniqueness to each experience, that it looks different for each person. And I tried to ask questions in my own research whether these images could be projections. And I find a pretty, I didn't find a high score of confirmation, but I found a high score of uncertainty. So it could be, and this is other researchers have concluded as well, that this other dimension is, it interacts with our minds, so we can kind of create our own kind of dimensional universe, and we can also create meetings with people in, you know, as you explained, in their younger age or however we want to interact with them. It seems to be that I asked about what is the experience, how is the experience received by each individual? And I asked, like, is it through the eyes? Is it through the, you know, how do you experience this? And most people here, 90%, more than 90% say that it's experienced through their mind, through consciousness. So if the experience is received through the mind, through consciousness, then it would also be like to suggest that that consciousness can interact with this dimension, interact with this experience. And other researchers, also researchers of out-of-body experience, have suggested the same, that this other dimension is very real, but it interacts with our mind. And therefore, we can, you know, basically create our own dimension, create our own paradise as such. So, yeah, I agree very much with that.
Yes, I would think because it is so intense, that is possibly why it appears to be more within the mind rather than something you would say you physically see down here with your eyes. I suppose it's really a degree of both, isn't it, in truth?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I asked if this other dimension was physical, and there everybody says no. And so when I try to ask what is this other dimension made of, I mean, basically 93% my research said it's a form of energy.
Yes.
So that actually, I mean, that makes sense. Also, if you look towards science, I mean, science today concludes that the fundamental level of the universe is energy. They made this, it's called, some you might know about, the double slit experiment, where they figured out that a particle was really not a particle. It was a wave instead. It's this wave pattern. And so science has proven that particles are really not solid. They're not, matter is not solid as we perceive it. It's kind of like a motion picture. These are many pictures that just rapidly seem to be alive, but they're not their individual pictures. In the same way, the energy and vibration creates an illusion that we are living in a world which is made of solid matter. But in essence, the fundamental level of the universe is energy. And this I found in my own research, that people actually, this is what they experience on the other side, it's energy. So we can't understand this other side, these other dimensions in a physical sense, because that's not what they're made of. And therefore, how do we understand this other world? Are they dimensions? What does it mean that we experience it through the mind? And it's a very big question, and it's very open-ended, because this is really another universe than what we're used to.
Right. So what do you think comes into the equation that makes you believe that God is in the light beyond death?
Well, that's basically because I've studied religion, I wanted, and I believe, I kind of had a hunch that there's best, I mean, these experiences of life after death and this light and almost these stories of heaven and hell, for me it sounds very religious in nature. And I also believe that when we go back in the literature, I mean, you know, if you go, but you know, you have Saul's trip to Damascus, where he falls off the horse and he sees this light, and that sounds to me very much like a near-death experience there in the Bible. You also have in Plato's philosophy in the Republic, you have this story of the soldier Ur who dies on the battlefield. After 12 days, he comes back to life, and he's also seen this bright light going up to heaven and so forth. So I think there's definitely a hint that there's a connection here. So as a philosopher, I wanted to see the connection here. So what I did in my latest research, what I put in my book, The Light Behind God, is that the whole reason I chose this title, The Light Behind God, is basically, as we just talked about, that God is not physical. It's a form of energy. So there's something behind our physical and our dogmatic understanding of God. There's something else behind it. And so what I found in my research is that I gave the experiences a choice, multiple choice, to explain what the core of their experience was. And here I found that 66% said it was the light of God, and 73% called it the light. But the highest score in my research here with 80% was the word God. Basically, a majority of people, 80%, chose to say that the core of their experience was an experience of God. So based on this, I definitely conclude that there is a connection towards God that we find religion and then the near-death experience. And it also seems to make sense because religion is about the afterlife. It's about heaven and hell, and there are many parallels, I believe. So this, in a way, I feel I got confirmed through this high score of the experiences using the word God to explain their experience.
Yes. I've had very few out-of-the-body experiences, but one that I did have during my sleep state was when I met a being in a white robe. But what really struck me so strongly was the energy of love that pervaded from this person. You couldn't describe it. We do not have the words that which would convey to somebody else who's never experienced what it is like. And I'm mentioning that because I wonder if when people feel that they've sort of felt this higher energy, is it because it's such a powerful force of love which they associate with God?
I think there are multiple reasons that it's being associated with God. But of course, you know, all the religions tell that God is love. And that's also what I found in my own research here. I found more than 90% they agreed to. They said the light is love, and they say God is love, basically. So it is love. That is, to put one word, what is this energy? What is this light? And to put one word on it, it's love. And obviously that's what we've been taught by religion. So there's a very strong parallel there too. So it's one reason, but I also think there are other reasons. For instance, I also found that 80% said that this experience was too big for them to comprehend. Basically, they couldn't interpret their experience precisely in human language because our human understanding and comprehension is not big enough to understand the whole. Basically, we are a small part of the universe, and therefore we cannot understand the whole. And this also serves as a kind of ontological proof of God, where we say that God is that which is greater than what we can conceive. Basically, God is the fullness, the wholeness, and because we are only a small part and we live in this very limited spectrum of reality, therefore it's difficult for us to understand the whole. Yeah. So I think, yeah, there are multiple reasons that point towards God and suggest that. But I also think that many people say that on the other side, there is no doubt. And of course, that's difficult for us to understand here on Earth because we live in a very relative world where people have different opinions and people, ideas conflict. But once you enter this other dimension, people will say that there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever because it's as I said earlier, it's a kind of perfection. There's unity and perfection. And that perfection also affects our understanding. So once we're on the other side, some people call it this is another core element where people have access to profound knowledge. Some people experience to receiving or understanding all the secrets of the universe. It's like all the knowledge and all the information of the universe is communicated to them, and in one instance they understand the mystery of the whole universe. So there's this kind of perfection in their understanding. And so if they, in that perfection, understand this energy to be God, then that is received with such clearness, without any shred of doubt, that people are absolutely sure that that's what they experienced, basically.
Now, you have mentioned, I believe, in one of your books, the experience of ABC anchor Bob Woodruff. Is that one that's worth relating to us?
I think, yeah, the reason I mention him is basically because I think his experience was not very deep and not very detailed, or at least not what he has revealed publicly. The reason I mention his was just to show that it's something that happens to all of us, and it's not, you know, some people might say it's people who are deluded or, you know, it's people who are kind of a little alternative who have these experiences. But I mention his case because he's a very public figure, and he would not you know, kind of make up the story, you know, at least to my mind. And, you know, he was there, you know, he was sent to Iraq, and the car he was traveling in there was an armored vehicle, but it was hit by a roadside bomb, and that's where he had his near-death experience. So, but it was not because it was specific in nature. He has not revealed a lot of details from it. Just he saw this light. He was outside of his body, and he could see things from there, and he experienced this light. And he actually said on he was interviewed on Larry King Live on CNN. And Larry King actually asked him, "Do you think this was God?" And he answered, "Well, I don't know, but it could have been. It could have been God." So he was a little uncertain about the conclusion there.
Right. Now, from all the information you've gathered, what have you found out that might indicate the purpose of life?
I think I tried to ask about that, and it seems to be the... I've been to India a couple of times, and I visited the grave of Mother Teresa, and on her grave is the quote from the Bible, which says, "Love each other as I have loved you." And I think it's a very powerful line. It reflects Mother Teresa, how she lived her life very well. Personally, I use the words that I came across once, "What is not given is lost." I think that this quote is from a popular spiritual book. I'm not sure. But basically, it seems to be that the purpose of life seems to be to love and to give. I mean, to give is one of the best ways we can show that we love, basically. So that seems to be the purpose. But there also seems to be a purpose of learning, of growing. So the reason we have these multiple levels of reality and multiple dimensions seem to be each level is kind of like a school where we learn and we grow. So that also seems to be growth, the growth of the soul and us learning. And here I would connect learning with love, because that is really, I believe, the purpose of our learning is to learn to love, because that's what it's really all about. Because, you know, God is love, this light is love. So growing the soul into a higher and better understanding of what love really is. I don't mean in a physical sense, but really understanding a deeper and fuller and truer nature of what love really is in its unconditional form. That is basically where we are growing. I think that is the purpose of life, as concluded from the near-death experience.
Yes. I think when you use the word unconditional, you really sort of hit it on the head there. I too believe that's what it's all about. And it's very difficult, I would imagine, on this earth plane to express unconditional love to everybody. Humans have or make judgments about other people. We share emotions of hatred, envy, and things like that. So it's a tall order, but I accept that possibly is what we're here to learn.
Yeah, I think so. This is one of the areas where I try to kind of really understand how the two dimensions relate. As a philosopher, the best way I can kind of understand this divine realm, and then how does it interact and how are we to understand the divine in our physical world, is really through duality. Because it's sure that if we take this absolute understanding of unconditional love, and if we try to apply it here in the world, sometimes we... you know, we actually will get hurt, and we can also sometimes maybe make things worse. So for me, it's really, I'm trying to understand how does this unconditional love, this absolute divine love, how do you find a way to live that? I mean, what's the right way to implement that? What's the right balance to live with here in this world? I think that's a very big question. I think maybe it's difficult for all of us to be Mother Teresa, so some of us are going to have to find balance in a different way, I think.
Yes. Well, I suppose you keep working at it, and if the truth is known, you do manage to evolve through trying to lead your life in that way. You've mentioned incarnation during our talk. Evidently, that is something you believe in.
I don't have any. I've heard it from some people I've interviewed. They talk about it, and like they've kind of witnessed as people coming back down to Earth by their own choice. It's not something I have done research on. It's not something I have a lot of evidence on. But naturally, because of my research, I do believe life continues. And if life continues, then reincarnation is a logical conclusion based on that. Because, you know, if life doesn't stop, then it has to go somewhere, and it might as well be recycled. I mean, that's also a basic scientific conclusion, that the energy, you know, universe is stable, so therefore it must, you know, it must transform from one form to another, and therefore it's in essence recycled. So no, I definitely support that conclusion.
Yeah. I've found that when I've spoken to people who have some knowledge of the Summerland or the astral realms, that it is a peculiar dimension in the sense that it seems to be unlike the Earth, which is divided up in a way that you have different countries and things like that. It seems to be more ethereal. They tell me that you go so far and then there's nothing. It's broken up. It makes it appear that the Earth, by comparison, is really an illusion. This is not the real life at all. Have you got any thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, one of the reasons, as we talked on in the beginning of the interview, one of the reasons that people don't want to come back is because on the other side, in the other dimension, in this other realm, they experience perfection. So that is, then when they come back, they experience the imperfection of this world, and of course that's why they want to stay on the other side, because it's truly perfect. And people will also say that the other dimension is, that is the, we could say, kind of the ultimate or absolute truth. So this world, in a way, is a kind of lower truth. It's a lower dimension. It's a lower reality. And so I would definitely support the idea that, because the other dimension is the ultimate reality and the absolute truth, therefore this world is a lesser truth. It's a lesser, you could say it's a lesser dimension, and it's less true. But I don't, personally, I don't like to conclude that it's all an illusion and it all does not matter, because personally, I feel that this world, there's suffering in this world. For instance, we have you know, people in Africa, we have children, thousands of children who die each day because they're, you know, because they're malnutrition and so forth, and preventable diseases. So I think even though that is not the absolute and ultimate truth, they will probably, you know, when they die, they will experience a higher truth, hopefully. It is still true in a relative sense because they are suffering. So therefore, I don't tend to fall on the conclusion that it's all an illusion as such, but it's definitely, it's not as true as the other dimension. That is the higher truth, the higher dimension, and therefore it is the most true. But it doesn't make this world untrue or like a total illusion. I don't think like that.
Right, let's move on to your books, Rene, and have a word or two about them. You've, I believe, written three books at the moment. Do they follow any type of sequence, or are they basically all about the same subject?
Well, yeah, they're all connected to near-death experiences. I think the first one was kind of my own, that was kind of my own awakening and my own initial interest in near-death experiences. And I tried to make some connections to philosophy, to science, based on this near-death research and what has been done already. That was my first book. My two next books contain my first research study. I spent 3 years doing a research study that both books are based on. But you can say this time I'm getting a little more focused on what I want to do. So they are both focused at, you could say, at religious fundamentalism in some way. My third book is The Light Behind God, and the purpose of this one, I call it What Religion Can Learn from the Near-Death Experience. And basically here I want to try to communicate to religion. And of course here I'm talking about dogmatic religion, where people think God is angry and punishes and so forth.
Yes.
So I want to communicate. I feel that the intense love and the message from the near-death experience is really an important message to bring to dogmatic religion today. So my second book had that same purpose also. Here, this is the book I called Behind 90 Minutes in Heaven. And this was kind of my, you could say, a little campaigning activity. I did. It's actually a very good book, 90 Minutes in Heaven, and you know, I'm very happy that it's very popular. But what happened is that Don Piper, who writes this, he was a Christian minister before. He uses his near-death experience to basically say that Jesus is the only way to heaven. And there's, in my, well, not in my view, but basically all researchers would disagree with that. And my own research has confirmed that that is not so. I mean, you can't say that there's only one way. And I also personally, I feel it's very destructive to have this one true God and then condemn everybody else to hell. Because if you're condemning people to hell, then you can't really respect them, and you're basically breaking the golden rule. So that was my second book. So you can say both books are very focused on creating a dialogue with religions in hope that we can create a better world. And I think that is what part of this learning, part of this purpose of life, most people who have near-death experience will say when they come back, they will want to create a better world. They will want the light to come through and create more love in the world. And one of the ways I chose to do that in my last two books was to focus on areas where there is conflict and the reasons why there is conflict. And I think one big reason for that is this dogmatic interpretation of God as being angry. I think that's very destructive. And it's something that the near-death experience totally disproves. So there's basically absolute, as I said earlier, no evidence that God is angry. So that's right. Kind of the purposes of those books.
Did you actually have a near-death experience yourself?
No, not in the literal sense of the word. I had a near-death-like experience. I was on a travel in India, and I was actually under the influence of LSD, and I had this very powerful experience, and it actually is very similar. It has all the core elements of a near-death experience. But today, because now I'm focusing on being close to physical death, I'm choosing to call it an NDE-like experience. But that's actually a very interesting topic, because what has happened after 75, when Raymond Moody coined the term near-death experience, what researchers found was that, well, this experience happens when people come close to physical death, but identical and similar, very similar experience also happens in many different circumstances. For instance, women who give birth, because it's a very painful situation, they will experience leaving their body and having an experience that's identical to the near-death experience. Also, people who are in a very frightening experience, but not close to physical death, will have the experience. And also spiritual inspiration, like, for instance, a deep prayer or meditation, will cause similar experiences. So it seems that it's not just being close to physical death, but there are many different doors or triggers that can take us there on the other side. And my theory on that is that it's basically ego death. So fear, pain, or drugs can cause ego death experiences, and that basically opens up the door to the spiritual realm, the spiritual dimension. Sleep right. might be another door that opens up.
Yes, so, indeed. Yeah. When you move into a different level, like the, what is it, the beta condition, I think they call it. Yes. I suppose as you fall into sleep, it's like really becoming semi-conscious, isn't it? And it seems in those conditions you can leave the body. Nevertheless, we're talking about your books now. Where can people buy these?
Through Amazon. Through Amazon.com, you can find The Light Behind God. You can find Behind 90 Minutes in Heaven and my first book, Awakening After Life. You can also, well, you can go on Amazon, just put in my name, René Jurgensen, and then you can find my books there. And also I have my website, which is www.renéjurgensen.com. That's R-E-N-E, René Jurgensen, JORGENSEN.com. So there's also a link to my books there and videos and other things.
Do you still have the other two websites that I've noted, RenéJurgensenConsulting.com? Is that still a live one?
Yes. That's actually people who feel the need to talk to me about issues such as grief, sorrow, or anxiety, or even depression. That's actually something new that came out of my books, that people, because I didn't even know that because I talk about life after death, people actually contact me with grief, sorrow, and anxiety and such issues. So I've started to consult people and try to help them the best way I can with these kind of issues. Yes. So that's another. There's a link through my renejorgensen.com, but otherwise it's renejorgensenconsulting.com. So anybody who feels a need to consult with me and ask advice and so forth, that's possible there. Yeah, because I think that's very much part of the light of a near-death experience, is that we want to help people, to help each other, and to love each other. That's really that's my intention with that.
Yes, I agree. Now, do you invite people to email you when they want to have a consultation?
Sure. People can do an initial question or contact with me, definitely. Yes, I receive emails practically each day with questions and so forth.
Would you like to confirm your email address?
Yeah, my email address is rene@renejorgensen.com. So that's Rene, R-E-N-E, and then Jorgensen, J-O-R-G-E-N-S-E-N.com. So there's also a link on renejorgensen.com. There's a link to contact me there.
All right. I gather you also have free newsletters?
Yes. I send out news when I have stuff, yes, so videos and clips and so forth. Yeah, so there's an email list there, so you can sign up to receive a free newsletter. And then when I just went to the IANS conference in September, and there I did almost 5 hours of interviews with people, and that these interviews are for my research primarily. But what I also do, I shoot videos and then put them on YouTube, and then people can basically watch and hear these words for themselves, because then they can make their own conclusions. When I edit the videos and stuff, then I send out links. And one YouTube channel there is called the same as my book, Light Behind God.
Yes.
That is my YouTube channel with all my research videos from my book, The Light Behind God. So that's basically you go on YouTube and then you search the channel Light Behind God, and there you can find the videos and watch those for yourself.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I believe you also do articles?
Yeah, I'm right now. Because I'm doing in-depth research. I'm writing articles for the Journal of Near Death Studies. I just finished an article about the Epic of Gilgamesh. It is one of the first epics in our history. It dates back to 2700 before Christ. So it's a very, very old epic, almost 5,000 years old. And I actually believe that this is a story of a near-death experience, because this King Gilgamesh, he goes in search of eternal life, and he goes through this tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel there's this light, and he finds himself in this jewel garden, and this garden sounds very much like the Garden of Eden. So I'm trying to raise that issue, whether we could be talking about the first near-death experience here in our literary history. So I do a lot of research there. And I also, if people have had a near-death experience, they can also contact me by email, because I'm doing a new research project right now. I'm trying to see what the parallels are between the near-death experience and the mystical experience. So in order to investigate these parallels, I'm doing a questionnaire. So anybody who has had a near-death experience, been close to physical death, and would like to contribute, they can also contact me by email, and then I'll send them the questionnaire.
That's great. Well, I regret to say, Rene, that I have to stop here. It's been very, very interesting to talk with you. I've got a minute or so to announce next week's guest, so I will thank you very much and wish you every success with your latest book. Thank you very much for coming onto the program.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, my friends, thank you for being with me today, and my guest, Rene Jorgensen. Next week, I have Lynn Serafin. She's a personal transformation coach, teacher, motivational speaker, talk radio show host, and also an Amazon best-selling author. And her life is spent trying to inspire and help people reconnect to themselves. And apparently her work has been widely acclaimed. It's been very successful. So I hope you can be with me next week as well. Thank you very much to all of you. God bless you.